Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. Today, we are chatting with Mary Lenneberg, author of Be Brave in the Sacred and Be Brave in the Broken, and also publisher of the podcast Mary and Jerry Podcast with her husband. She is also a mentor for couples throughout the world who struggle with loss, addiction, and trauma. Mary will be sharing how to forgive our spouses through the many trials of marriage. Thank you, Mary, for joining the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We're really excited to hear your side, your story about forgiveness, because this month of March is we're focusing on forgiveness. So can you please share with our audience kind of why you're going to be talking to us about this forgiveness?
Sure. So my husband and I have been married now for, at the time of this podcast, for 35 years. And we have been through a lot in our 35 years of life. We were blessed with four souls, two that we did not get to know. We lost in miscarriage, and two that we did. And our son, Jonathan, is now 34, and he's married and has a son of his own and living beautiful life. And our daughter, Courtney, who's 3 years younger, she passed away when she was 22. When she was 5 weeks old, she began to have grand mal seizures for unknown reasons. For her whole life, there was unknown as to why. There were no really medical answers. And so for 22 years, I was her primary caregiver. Through medical interventions, she basically became blind. She was wheelchair bound. She was about the developmental age of a 9-month-old. And so when something like that happens in your marriage, 80% of all parents that have disabled children end up in divorce. And the reason being is because of the stress and the pressure that caring for this one child, even when you have other children that need your love and your care and your attention, and oh, by the way, you're married and your husband needs your love, time, and attention, the strain is often too much. And what we found in our marriage is that it uncovered a lot of things that needed healing. So my husband had brought into our marriage an addiction to pornography, and I brought into our marriage an addiction to food. And so Courtney and her situation, it was like a volcano. It was scorched earth, you know, and we had to make a decision. She was probably like 2, I think, when everything just kind of fell apart. And we had to make a decision to fight for one another and to forgive one another and to work within that marriage. And it was very, very challenging. It probably took, I would imagine, a dozen years for us. I mean, and we were well into, I joined him in his addiction to pornography because I was afraid he would leave the marriage. We were not well formed. I was not well formed. I mean, I grew up in a Catholic family, went to Catholic school, but I didn't own my faith. And so all of this is happening. He's in the military at the time. And it was a disaster. It was a disaster. And we entered into counseling, praise God, marriage counseling. There was no other counseling available at the time, like there is now for addictions. I joined a 12-step program. We began marriage counseling. We made choices for one another. And along that way, we had to learn to forgive one another. And we had to learn to forgive ourselves. And we had to ask forgiveness of our son. So really, for the past 35 years, it's been a walk in forgiveness. It's been a walk in a daily walk of asking the other, you know, to truly love the other, to make that decision to place their needs above your own. And so I ended up writing 2 books about my own journey, Be Brave in the Scared and Be Bold in the Broken. And my husband and I now have a podcast, and I now mentor women, accompany women to overcome in my program called Resilience Rising. So, you know, the Lord has taken some very broken pieces of our life, shattered pieces of our life. And it is through those broken places where the light shines the brightest. And that's where we find ourselves now in ministry to other couples and single people and college students to, you know, just to rise up and be resilient and forgive. And it's not forgetting, but it's a process of choosing freedom for yourself. So.
Mm. And
that's a little bit of our story.
Yeah. That's a little bit. Yeah. And I'd love to go back and just kind of talk about how it started. So you've said that you wanted to fight for one another. And was it
early on, you said your daughter was 2 years old when kind of everything started coming up. Was that when you went to marriage counseling?
Or? We didn't go to marriage counseling right away. So we had to, so when she was about two is when I sort of, we discovered all the things. Like, he had been hiding that, I had been hiding things. And that's when I sort of entered into it with him. And so for the next 4 or 5 years, we were literally walking the tightrope to hell. It was just, we were barely surviving. Our son was having issues. You know, Courtney's health was in and out. She was in the ICU on the regular. We were surviving. And it really wasn't until he left the military that's when we, along the way, God had given us people to kind of bolster us. He had given us friends, neighbors across the street that walked with us. He had given us a good priest at the base where we were assigned that kind of knew some of the situation and was trying, you know, in direction. We would meet with him. He would come for dinner, that we'd put the kids down for bed. He'd talk with us, because there really wasn't, you know, it's not like you ran out in the 1990s and said, hey, we have a porn addiction. Can you please help us? There was not even the priests were like trained, mm-hmm. like nobody talked about it. And in the military, it's very prevalent because there's a lot of loneliness. There's a lot of time spent by yourself and away from your spouse. And so it's just really challenging. And it wasn't until we settled here in Northern Virginia, where we are now, that the Lord brought us our best friends, Christine and Marks. And they knew something as we were getting to know them and our families were spending time together. They are very wise people, and they're actually younger than we are by about 6 or 7 years. But they had been through a lot in their own lives. And Marks is now a deacon in the church. So they had this disposition to the Lord. And they kind of challenged us. They saw some things in our communication and they were like, something's not right here. And I will never forget that night. We sat and there was a lot of tears and there was a lot of, we're in this and what do we do and how do we get out? And I love him and he loves me. And we, neither one of us wants to be here. Neither one of us wants to be addicted to these things. And basically at the root of all of that was we were afraid to deal with all of the emotion. You know, addiction numbs. That's what it does. It's its number one function. And when you're basically trying to keep your daughter alive and your marriage together and your sanity, it's just a heck of a combination. And when you don't have a good, grounding in faith, whether you be Catholic, whether you be Christian, if you don't know God, then you are that flag on a windy day, just whipping around and fraying on the edges and just trying to survive. And so it was really in that time. So it took us probably 7 years from the time that we sort of discovered all of these things to really begin that healing process. And it first started with admitting where we were, what was going on, and what we had to do to get out of it. And unfortunately, with pornography, it's an addiction of the imagination. So it's not like with my addiction to food, I can walk out of the kitchen. I can walk away from something and it's not physically present. But with pornography, it's always in your mind. And so even to today, in how we speak to one another and how we are intimate together and how we walk in our marriage, we have to be very, very careful. And St. Michael helps us and St. Rita helps us and St. Mary Magdalene helps us. We have to be very careful in how the words we choose and the actions we take so that we remain in this sanctified and glorified place and not slip back into old habits where Satan likes to remind us of it on the daily, you know, that, hey, you're not all that and a bag of chips and you think you've beaten this, but I have something else to tell you. So it's a daily walk.
Yeah. And what would you say were kind of the hardest parts about that beginning stages of forgiveness? Like, what was your hardest obstacle to overcome, or was it easy? I would assume it was probably not easy, but
not easy. I am not going to sit here and say, oh yeah, it was a cakewalk. No, I think the hardest parts for us were as a couple to literally sit down and look at one another and say the things we needed to say. Like, you have hurt me in this way. You have used me in this way. You have wounded me in this way. And not just me to him, but him to me. You know, it was a mutual conversation. I think that was, I'll never forget that conversation. I can go back to there right now in my mind. It was beautiful, and it was hard, and it was honest. And at that point, there's nothing. It's almost like you're standing naked in front of the other person, but it's even worse because they see your soul. Like, they see the most broken parts of you. And what we had to go back to our families of origin and look at the wounds and how it happened and how we got to this place. You know, you don't just show up one day addicted to things. You know, it's in how you were raised. It's in how you grew up and the choices that you make. You know, it compounds over time. And so I think that was the hardest conversation. I think the second hardest thing was talking to our best friends and bringing them in. To bring somebody else into your shame is very vulnerable. And there has to be a level of trust that I didn't really have that level of trust with my own husband at that point. But for whatever reason, the Lord, in his infinite wisdom, grace, and mercy, placed these two individuals who were solid in their faith. They had their own issues. We were able to minister to them along the way as well. It was never just them to us. It's a true friendship. So it goes back and forth. But he gave us a gift in them. And they were, you know, counselor. They were one's accountability partner. They helped us meet God in the most intimate ways. Mm-hmm. And they showed us who he was, more so than our catechism ever had. So to let somebody else in is always hard, because when you let somebody in, when you're vulnerable, then you're allowing yourself to be wounded. You're allowing yourself that somebody else has the power to hurt you. Mm-hmm. That's what love is. You know, it's that's what the church is. We're the walking wounded. Like, we're walking around with open heartbeats going, please don't hurt me. But at the same time, I can't guard my heart completely. I can't have a wall there because I have to love. Mm-hmm. And so I need that to love. But I think the freedom that forgiveness brings, you know, forgiveness is not one moment. And I think that's what I thought for a long time. It was like, oh, I'm going to forgive him and we're fine. Let's go. No, forgiveness is a decision. And it's a decision that happens every day. And it's a decision. It's like love. It's a choice. It costs something, right? And so every day, if I'm reminded of something, you know, I constantly, my spiritual director said, you know, your grace is sufficient. Your grace is sufficient. If a moment of shame is brought up from my past in my thought or in, you know, I hear a song or I see something or I hear, you know, all those things that remind you, your grace is sufficient. Lord Jesus, I trust in you. And we now are in a place where healing continues. I'm not going to say it's completely done because I don't think we're ever completely healed till we're with the Lord. But gosh, we're in a good place, and we're able to love one another fully and freely as we are, with our weaknesses and with our strengths. And we're able to talk about these things and sit with other couples and sit with other, you know, Jerry walks with several men as they're battling this. Mm-hmm. And that would never have happened without the Lord, you know, and those individuals, you know, we're their Marks and Christine. We're their people. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful thing to hold space for someone like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, forgiveness is a choice and it's an active choice. It's like love. It costs something and it continues every single day. It's not just one moment. It's a process.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned earlier about the forgiveness between you and your husband, but then also with your son. How did that look, you know? You mentioned asking for forgiveness from him. So how did that's very humbling, obviously, but how did that look for him and your relationship with him?
Well, I can only speak from my side of the relationship. And he's a very private young man and he and his wife do not live their life in public. So I'm very respectful of that, but I'll speak to my side of that. I wrote about it in Be Brave and the Scared. He went through a time in college that was very hard for him, and was diagnosed with anxiety and post-traumatic stress because of some of the things that happened with his sister. He was present when she stopped breathing. Mm-hmm. He was present when she was rushed to the ICU. I mean, that takes a toll on a little boy who's just trying to protect his sister and trying to be a boy, you know? And so during that time when he came home from college, we entered family therapy. And I remember specifically one session where, you know, the doctor had said to us, you know, you two, you have to, you know, he's going to say what he's going to say. You guys just listen and receive. And I was not surprised at all. I was fully prepared because I knew in my heart that, you know, what he was going to say was going to hurt if I allowed it to hurt. But what I promised myself and what I asked the Holy Spirit was to give me the eyes to see his wound and not my own. Like, this wasn't about me. This was about helping him to heal. And so he shared with us that he felt that we loved Courtney more than we loved him. And that's very common in special needs families, where you are constantly putting one child ahead of the others, because if you don't, they will die. You know, I mean, it's a life and death thing. And so I had to receive that. You know, I know it's not true, but that's how he felt. And he had every right to feel that. And so we began a process on that day for the next few years. One of the things that Jonathan, when he was younger, at about 10 or 11, a lot of boys do this. Like, he didn't want to be hugged in public. He was just like, you know, you're over there, I'm over here, or, you know, typical things. And during that session, he had said to us, you know, you never hug me. Like, you're holding Courtney all the time, but you never hug me. And I remember so specifically, I was like, wait, what? You know? And the doctor, like, looked at me and put his hand up and said, hush, this is his time. He went on and said some other things. And I raised my hand like a kid in class. I'm like, you know, can I? And the doctor looked at me, yes, Mary, you can say. And I said, I've tried to hug you since you were 10 years old. Like, you have rejected every hug. I mean, that's all I can say. Like, I said to him, and Jerry said to him, my husband, we are so sorry. We were doing our best, you know, and we weren't taught how to do any of this. Like, I'm dyslexic. I couldn't spell neurology, let alone explain to you everything that was happening in Courtney's brain, you know? And it was just that moment of levity that, like, wait a minute, I have tried and you have rejected me. So our assignment for the next 3 years as a family, and it began in the office that day, was we had to have a group hug for 3 minutes. Now, let me tell you, that first group hug was hysterical because I'm a hugger and my boys are not huggers. And I am hugging. Like, Jonathan's 6'2", big bearded dude. My husband's 6 feet. Like, these are not small people. I am hugging. And the doctor, Dr. Joe, had the timer on and we're like at 35 seconds and both of them are just the arms down. They're like, are we done yet? Are we done yet? You know, and I'm like, no, we have 2.5 minutes left. I love you. And we got to the point at the end of those 3 years when, you know, he was on his way and living his life and doing all the good things, having come through that season, where he would walk into the house and he would hug me so hard, I'd have to go to the loo. I just like, he'd be like, Mom, you know, this big hug. So, you know, forgiveness, that's, and that path of healing, it takes time. It takes time. It's not, you know, you're not hurt instantly and you're not forgiven instantly. You know, I hear a lot of times people say, you know, my family was shattered in an instant. Yes, I get that. But at the same time, God was there. You know, God is there. He's there in the shattering. He allows it for reasons I can't explain. You know, I look forward to it one day. See it all, like, oh, that's what you were doing. Okay. But, you know, he gives us opportunities every single day. His mercies are new every day. And so we get to get up and try again. And, you know, Satan is the one that comes along and reminds you of yesterday and what you didn't do and how you did it wrong. And we just have to be people who put our faith and our hope and our trust in the Lord and have Our Lady walk with us. I mean, oh my goodness, talk about a human person who felt all the feels. She watched him murder her son. He got lost in the temple. You know, he's preaching. He's asking her, woman, what is it you want of me? And she's like, do whatever he tells you. Mm. I mean, this woman experienced everything that we as women and as mothers could ever experience. The highs and the lows. So why wouldn't we ask her in? You know, one of my favorite image of Our Lady is the Pietà. And I love that because when you look at the Pietà, she is not grasping Jesus. She's not holding him to her. She has her hands open, offering her son to the world. And it's a gentle reminder to us, especially those of us that have had children or have adopted children. Our kids don't belong to us. They belong to God and him alone. And just like, you know, as we're in the season of Lent, as we're recording this, you know, we came from God. We're going to go back to God. So I want to make sure, you know, that scripture says everything that is loosed here is loosed in heaven. Everything that is held onto here is held onto in heaven. I want it all loosed. I want it all loosed. I want, you know, I want it all gone because my daughter is there. You know, she is a saint in the communion of saints. She's an innocent, and I'd like to see her again.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if it's about her and how did she play with her, you know, your growth and taking care of her and just loving her and her loving you. Did that play a role in your ability to forgive? Like, you know, it holds up a mirror. Did you ever feel like, oh, wow, this has been so helpful for us?
We wouldn't be who we are without her. Mm-hmm. None of us would. Our family would have been destroyed without her. I'm not sure we would have had one if the same situations had happened without her, because one thing that, you know, most special needs situations, they pull the family apart. Jerry and I both come from very strong families. There's not a lot of divorce. There's not a lot of, you know, parents who have gone through a lot. And both our sets of parents were born in the Depression. And so they went through a lot as children themselves. And they brought in this idea of we are family, blood is thicker than water, and we will fight for one another until the end. You don't got to like me, but you got to love me, right? But that's like that we both came from families like that. They weren't perfect by any means. And there were wounds there. But we had that example of fighting, of staying in the fight for one another. And neither one of us, you know, I remember a conversation where I was just like, well, I guess we need to separate. You need to leave. And he just looked at me and he's like, I'm too tired to do this. And we're too poor to do this. So how about we figure out another way to do this? And I'm like, that makes sense. Okay, let's try it. I mean, it was just so ridiculously, you know, just so ridiculous. Like the Holy Spirit was just there, like, come on, guys, like you can do this. And we came. We had a saying that love always wins. Love always wins. We are just gonna survive this. This is a season. It's gonna pass like a kidney stone, and it's gonna hurt, but we're gonna get through it, right? And we're just people of resilience, and we're people of fortitude, because she taught us how to do that. If she was willing to fight herself, then gosh darn it, I wasn't gonna leave her. I wasn't gonna leave her. So we rallied around her, and she constantly brought us before the Lord, constantly begging, pleading, interceding. All of the things. But Courtney's one job, you know, the world looks at a child like Courtney and they think burden. They think has no use in this world. They think, why? You know, it's a punishment. There was nothing in Courtney that was a punishment. She had everything she needed from the Lord to do the job she was sent here to do. And she entered into it fully and freely and just carried that cross as she was asked to do. And her one job was to love, to receive love and to give it. And she did it beautifully without ever saying a word. You know, she was love. She was pure joy. you were around her, you would laugh. She would draw you in with her eyes. She would draw you in with her laughter that sounded like a drunk frat student, you know, on a Saturday night. It was just this, you know, this huge laughter. When she wanted something, she would hum like Chewbacca from Star Wars, you know? So she communicated in the way she could. And we knew her very, very well. I knew when she was hungry. I knew when she was mad. I knew when she didn't like something. You know, other people would look at it and go, what is she saying? I'm like, oh, she's really irritated right now. She does not want to wear these pair of shoes. She is not into it, you know? But so you learn those things. But by becoming a team and rallying around her, it saved us because it gave me a constant focus, you know, Jerry and the children. I had to learn to put my marriage first and my children second. And that was a hard lesson. And many women today struggle with that and they don't do it. And then they end up in getting divorced in 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. We've been married 35 years. There are people we know that have been married 45 and 50 years that are leaving one another because they just don't love each other anymore, end quotes. And I'm like, you've spent 50 years with this person. Like, what? You know, so now there are many reasons. I'm not going to say all of those are not legitimate. Okay. There's, you know, obviously there's abusive situations, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, all of that. I get that. But just because you're bored with one another, well, like find a new hobby.
Yeah.
Go on a vacation. I don't know. Like go see a counselor. Come on. Like, really? So I, you know, I say that rather flippantly because I know that Jerry and I could be those people very easily. We could be those people if we chose to. So yeah, she kept us together.
I kind of want to go back to, you had mentioned, the idea of like all this pain, you know, all this breaking of trust, through the addictions and through just kind of the circumstances that you were in. How did you, I mean, you mentioned, speaking with, you know, your very close friends, that they were the support. Were there other ways that you practiced rebuilding the trust between you and your husband? And even with your son too, like how did you rebuild the trust other than you mentioned like therapy, but what were other ways that you did, what you used to build that trust?
To rebuild trust means you have to be intentional, right? And there's always a possibility that they'll hurt you again. Mm-hmm. Okay. Addiction is such that we will all fall, right? So the thing is when you fall 7 times, you get up 8. Okay. So I know, Jerry has been sober for 20 years now. I have been sober for probably 12. And I use that word sober because sobriety means to be aware of all the things, right? It's clean, it's new, it's a fresh start. And so it's not as challenging as it was, okay? It's still challenging. They're still there and addiction never leaves you. But as far as rebuilding trust, yes, we had our friends. We entered into marriage counseling, right? So that was a good thing. We both got spiritual directors because as Catholics, we can do that. That was a good thing. We walked through that season with Jonathan, and it was learning how to love him as him, right? What does he love? What is it? Can we participate in that with him? Can we build a friendship with him? And that's an ongoing thing, right? That's an ongoing thing that will be going on for the rest of our lives as his life changes and, you know, the circumstances in his life change. Now we have this beautiful daughter-in-law and a beautiful grandson and all of that works together. And some days are challenging and some days are awesome. And, you know, it's humanity, it's relationships, right? Other things that we did, like I said, I entered into Overeaters Anonymous. I walk through the program. It's called Bloom with Restored Integrity with women that have been affected by porn addiction. We've done retreats. We just are constantly, we've done a lot of reading. Dr. Bob Schutz and the John Paul II Institute with Be Healed has been a tremendous assist to us. Also, the Theology of the Body Institute up in Black Rock with Christopher West, that was transformational for us. We did that in 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. And that was the healer. That was to understand what our bodies are made for and the beauty of our bodies and the beauty of the marital embrace and the beauty of what God is calling us to now as we're aging together and growing old together. There's still tremendous love and care that needs to be transpire there. Right. And so learning, I mean, John Paul II's teachings were just monumental.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
everything.
Sorry.
So yeah, that's okay. Yeah. But we've done all of that. And we continue. We continue to take refreshers. We continue to go on retreats. We continue to date one another. You know, so important to have those conversations. And when the big feels come, which there are a lot of big feels. This past year has been very challenging. He lost his sister and our niece. We've got family members that are battling life-threatening illnesses. I mean, this is life, you know? And so you've got to be able to receive the big feel, identify what it is, where it's coming from, and walk through it and not allow it to totally pull you under. And that's only with God.
Mm. And you mentioned a lot of great resources, but you also have a great resource. And before I let you kind of explain what you're coming up with this in March, I do want to ask you kind of a final last words for encouragement for couples who are struggling with trust in their spouse or struggling with addiction. What would your like final words of encouragement be for them?
The thing about that is both people have to be willing to move, right? When the pain of staying where you are is more than the idea and the pain of moving forward, you got to move. And so this forgiveness is two ways. Now, you might be in a situation where they will not forgive, or they will not, you might not even be able to speak to them again, right? Then what you do is you ask through God, like, Lord, please forgive me for this. And may they forgive me for this if I ever have an opportunity to ask for it, right? But with our walk, it's a daily ask. So two things of encouragement. Number one, the question that changed everything for us in our marriage, we learned in theology of the body. And that was simply to ask the other, how can I make your day better? How are you? And how can I make your day better? And to really be open to what they say. Because sometimes you're the issue, right? A nagging or, you know, just bad mood or whatever. So that's first. So ask and you shall receive, right? Mm-hmm. And the second thing is to remember that forgiveness is an action that is continual. Have the hard conversations, but you're going to go through layers of forgiveness. So don't, you know, stay in the fight. Know that God brought the two of you together. And if it is a good, solid sacramental marriage, you know, there's a reason for you to be with one another. If there are other issues there that need to be addressed, then that's what spiritual direction and marriage counseling are for. So take advantage of all of those things.
That's excellent. Thank you. And would you mind sharing with us what you and your husband have going now?
Sure. So we started a podcast, the Mary and Jerry podcast. So we're really excited about that. It's just a conversation between the two of us. We answer any and all questions. No topic is off limits. It gets very funny sometimes. We talk about, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I'm not joking. We talk about it all. And it's just from a Catholic perspective, you know, my husband's a convert. I'm a cradle Catholic. So it's just a lot of fun. People have asked us to do that for years. So we finally have done that. And then the second thing is that I have a mentoring program, and it's not a coaching program. It's mentoring because it's relational, and it's called Resilience Rising. And it's a 9-week course for women that, you know, they come together. There's a video that they watch. And then we have a live coaching every week, live mentoring session with me. And then they get a one-on-one throughout those 9 weeks. They also get community because we're in this group situation. So it's really been something that has been very heavy on my heart for a long time. Lord and I have had a few arguments about it. And finally, we decided it was time to launch it. So that is available in March. It's called Resilience Rising. And you can find all the information about it on marylenneberg.com, which is my website.
Perfect. And we'll link that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Mary, for being on the show and sharing, you know, your very intimate, you know, details of your life. And just, it's beautiful to hear your story, and we're really grateful to have you.
If it helps someone, then it's a good thing. So thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Fairs Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at fairslove shrine.org.